Did you just say you're going to take a cross the country bike trip with your children?
Starting June 1st, we're going to bike from Oregon to Virginia, 4,200 miles. Everything will be on our bikes, our tents, our pillows, what? Sleeping bags. That is what we'll be doing, sleeping alongside the road, churches, people's lawns, campsites. A well-earned adventure after 10 years of building a business together.
And you think your kids are going to make it?
I have no doubt. I always tell my kids, some things are fun, but this will be good. Fun is one of those idols we have, that everything has to be fun. Church, work, everything has to be fun. Mm-hmm. But when God created the world, he said it was good, mm-hmm. not fun.
Wow.
And we don't believe that work is good and is one of our most fundamental problems.
Hi, I'm Steve. For nearly 30 years, I've been a pastor and disciple maker, and what I really love doing is helping guys be better followers of Christ and better leaders at home.
I'm Mark, a certified financial planner with an MBA and an Ivy League degree who wants to make sure you're making the smartest money decisions possible.
And this is Abraham's Wallet. Join us weekly and create a culture in your family of multi-generational prosperity, spiritually, relationally, physically, intellectually, and financially. Run your home, your dough, like a biblical boss.
Justin, here we are in the middle of the day on a Tuesday, and I see you're coming to me from the inside of a work van. Is that where you are?
Yeah, we are. Henry and I are installing a washer and dryer for a lady who's getting a hip replacement, so we're working on that. He's actually finishing up the job as I speak, so he may pop in here in a little bit.
Oh, I see. And do you, I'm imagining that your days are varied and wild and wonderful, and you do all sorts of things in the span of a week. Is that right?
Sounds pretty accurate, yes.
Okay, so two things. Tell us what you do, and who's this Henry that you refer to?
So Henry is my son, 18 years old, just turned 18. We have a remodeling business where we work together and have since he's been about 8 years old. And yeah, that's the short of it.
Okay, so you care to explain that? How you, because I was going to set you up and say something like, oh, did he get off school early today? It's 1:30. So tell me about having an 8-year-old apprentice at your work.
Yeah. So the short story is I became a father because a lot of dads, my wife was super excited about it. And I wasn't opposed to the idea. And she wanted to have a lot of sex. I was like, this could be fun. And then all of a sudden kids started coming around and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be a good dad. I really do. But I didn't have any idea how to be a good dad. And I just felt like my job was to be like a good servant leader. Don't be a jerk. Don't scream and yell. Provide money. And that was my template. And I was exposed to this idea that as a dad, you could lead a team and you could do something total. You could think of your family as a team and you could be a leader of a team and take your team on an adventure. And that idea was literally, I never even thought that was possible. I didn't know. I had a background in sports and work, and I thought that was team, but family wasn't a team. And so that shifted my whole paradigm. And over a couple years, I was wrestling with this question I felt God put on my heart was like, what would happen if you came home and worked with your family as a team? And so we cashed out every retirement account we have and started building houses or remodeling houses, I should say, with no experience at all. And that really upended all of that. And so it started up on this family business. And along the way, there were some paradigm shifts I had. I remember when Henry was about a year and a half and I was still in this, my mode was like, I have to be the best dad and make his life so fun. So I designed this day that had everything fun for him. And he had literally the best day of his life. He was some year and a half, 2 years old. And I remember by the end of the day, I was like, I just slammed it out of the park. He had ice cream, zoos, playgrounds. And end of the day, I was like, okay, Henry, you've had the best day of your life. It's time for bed. And he threw a temper tantrum. And I was like, what happened? And I realized, and I hear this story all the time, that it was my fault. I created a monster that day. I gave him everything he wanted. And so he felt entitled to more at 2 years old.
Yeah.
And that's when I started was a one data point of an awakening. Like maybe I'm not doing this thing right. Maybe what the culture is telling me is not right. And so we still do fun things with our kids, but we've switched it back where the testing and the challenging is so vital to their development and making everything about them. We ended up with 6 kids. We did foster care. So we had lots of kids coming in and out of our home, and we couldn't meet all of our kids' needs all the time. And initially you start to feel guilty about that because everyone's telling you need a 30-minute routine bedtime for each kid so they get the individual attention they need. And I'm like, I can't do that. And yeah. I'm glad I can't do that. It's actually not good for a child to have that much individual attention. And so we started doing things where we wouldn't rescue them. I remember when they were younger and they were struggling to do something, we would just watch. Every time I have parents around my young kids and they're struggling, I'm like, do not step in.
Don't intervene.
Just let them. Don't intervene. Let them work through this. They're about to do something really crazy. Obviously, you step in, but otherwise, let them work through stuff. Our nature is to just rescue these kids. So with some of the work and things we did, started to really shift how we changed our parenting.
Wow. You are leading us right into really the subject of the lesson that I want you to give us today, which here at Abraham's Wallet, our whole deal is we want to inspire and equip people to lead their homes and their finances like a biblical boss. And it can sound nice to say, oh yeah, let's all just be good Christians in the way that we lead our homes. But the truth is, when we start looking into the biblical picture of the kind of people we're supposed to create and the cost involved in creating those people, it is very countercultural. You have already said several things that are very countercultural. You have in your recipe for people building resilience. And what you're talking about when you say, don't jump in and rescue a kid who's struggling, if they're figuring something out, if they can do something, let them do it. You're talking about resilient kids. And we're going to hear about your bike trip later on, where that resilience will be tested and it'll be fully on display for quite a while. Just want to set this up for everybody so that they might be more prone to listen to you. If there's something, he's one of those crazy guys. I bet he's got chickens and goats. He does have chickens and goats. But they might be thinking, oh, he's just a unique guy. He's one of those wild guys that live in the woods. And he doesn't, by the way, he lives in a neighborhood. But I just want everybody listening to know that the kind of stuff that we're describing, it's actually God's will for them for the creation of their own children. Now, I'm just going to throw 2 verses at you and then let you respond to them, Justin. But here's a verse I had to memorize. I think I memorized this in 3rd grade. We refer to it as the Great Commission. It's the end of Matthew 28. It says, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and listen to the way I'm going to word this, and teach them to obey everything I've commanded you. Now, that could also be translated, teach them how to obey. But teach them to obey. Teach them how to obey. Now, I just want to throw this out just for a second. I want to ask this question. If it's our job to teach people to obey, and I think we could safely say that our children are the first disciples on our downline, are the children under our roofs. Let me just ask the question, how did Jesus learn to obey? How did God teach Jesus how to obey? That'd be very helpful if your job is to teach other people how to obey. The answer to that question is in Hebrews chapter 5. And it simply says this, you can look it up yourself, verse 8, it says, Jesus learned obedience. Now that we don't think of Jesus learning obedience, we think he came out of the womb knowing how to obey, but the Bible says he learned how to obey. He learned obedience by the things that he suffered. Isn't that fascinating? Jesus learned obedience by the things that he suffered. So to go back to what you said, Justin, if our whole MO as parents is to prevent all suffering for our children, we will not train them to obey. First us, and secondly, God by extension. So having a right diet of suffering with our oversight is an absolutely necessary thing for us to do with our children. I have questions for you, but what's your immediate response to me saying those things?
Yeah, I like tangible examples, just to give you some examples of this. I remember when Henry was about 8 years old, he had this idea to start a business, and he had a little bit of money at that time, and he wanted to sell water bottles. So he took his money, got some water bottles that he wanted to sell at this parade down our street. Well, it happened today. Normally the parade, the weather's nice. It was freezing cold out that day. And I was like, and he's all excited about this business idea and making this money and all this. And I was like, I'm not going to say a word. And I was like, this is probably going to fail. So he drove up and down the whole parade route trying to sell these things. And he didn't sell. I don't think he sold a single bottle. And Everything in my being wanted to be like, let me coach you. Let me help you. Let me prevent this. I don't want you to feel this much rejection in your life. And he went up and back. He walked in the door and just bawled. Aww. And I was like, oh, man. And I was like, sorry, buddy. I know what it's like when you put it out there and it doesn't work. But I wanted him to walk through that. And I knew if I intervened and prevented that absolute failure, I would have short-circuited what you were talking about, like that character that gets developed through failure. It's so vital in our kids' walk, you know?
Yeah, I see this thread throughout your parenting. It's such a simple thing, but chores have become passé. When I grew up with boomer parents for whom chores probably included farm duties. They certainly included manual labor. And so when I was a child, there were chores that were just a part of life. You had to help make the house go. And it seems that those things have gone the way of the poodle skirt, if I can invoke that idea. But you tell us about the chores that you have insisted upon for your children.
Yeah, so I think it's always good to start somewhere. And our crucible was breakfast. Because I could be home for breakfast and I could lead it, we would give everybody jobs during breakfast and I would lead it. I wouldn't put it on my wife. I think a lot of dads are like, you manage this by yourself. I'm going to work. So we would make breakfast our crucible. So everyone would take a turn making eggs. Everyone would take a winter taking care of the animals, which meant every day they would go outside. Every day. And in Cincinnati here, we have winter and it would be freezing cold and they would be standing at the door crying, going, I don't want to go outside today. And I'd be like, well, you can do it now or after this series of disciplines. You can choose when you want to do it, but you will absolutely do it.
Yeah.
And I watched them walk through that process. Every kid had to do a winter because I knew that character. And then by 3 weeks into it, they just stopped whining and complaining. They got up, put their coat on, went out and did it. And they had that thing in there like, this is... And I would always, there's such that word fun. If you ask anyone, it's like their favorite word to use is fun. I always tell my kids, some things are fun, but this will be good. And our culture also has a really bad belief because fun is one of those idols we have that everything has to be fun, church, work, everything has to be fun. Mm-hmm. But when God created the world, he said it was good, not fun.
Wow.
And we don't believe that work is good. And that is... are one of our most fundamental problems. We actually have a belief problem. If we thought work was good, we wouldn't feel guilty or feel like we needed to reward them every step of the way when we were work. Like, I'm inviting you into something good. Work is good. And I think if people explored, I know I did, I believed it was bad and I was feeling guilty about it until I read the Bible where it said work is good. And that was the first thing the Father did, was create children to work alongside him. He made a garden. He didn't make Disney World. He made something that required work so his children have a job, Adam and Eve.
Yes.
That's a profound thought. And so that alone really propelled me to think differently. I don't like chasing the latest parenting books because you end up just following the fads. And I like going back to the foundation of the Bible because I can trust on that.
Amen.
Yes.
That's so good. I think it's a word also for dads listening. And I think it's a really big deal to have men be careful about the way that you talk about your work, because work is a gift from God. It's something we were made to do. And don't talk about your work like it's your evil stepmother, that it's a job you have to do. We don't have any choice in it. We're supposed to take joy in our work and realize if I wasn't working, my soul would corrode. It's bad for me to not be productive. It's bad for me to not use my skills and my gifts to make something happen. So I think there's a good warning for dads in there as well. So give me your thoughts on the affirmation culture of kids.
Yeah, we've overcorrected on something. It's obviously a good idea to affirm our children at times. But if you think of the Bible, I always think about train in the way that you should go. How often do I get affirmed through my day? You know, it's really not that often as an adult, right? I don't get hand claps every time I tighten a screw or I don't drill in a screw and turn around and wait for everyone to clap. And so what happens when you do it and do it, the kids feel like when it's not there, they all of a sudden are going, did I do it wrong?
Yeah.
And they're very insecure. So your goal when you affirm them is to build them up and make them stronger. But what you've actually done is made them more insecure. You've created them a dependency where they need it to happen all the time.
That's great.
And over-encouraging actually creates insecure children that need constant feedback that are too dependent on affirmation to do anything.
That is fantastic. Let's just dial in a little bit more on what we mean when we say resilient. So a resilient kid is one who will pursue excellence, even if it's painful. They'll pursue God, even if it's painful. They'll honor covenants, even if it's painful. When you say resilient, what you're talking about is someone that knows how to suffer. Yes. That is, when trouble comes, they don't give up. When trouble comes, they don't go, I guess I wasn't liked. Abraham Lincoln lost his first 5 political campaigns. He lost. And the world was basically saying, Abe, we're not interested in you. Thanks so much. Go have a seat over on the side. And if Abe's whole deal was that he didn't have any resilience built into him, he's like, I don't know. People don't seem to really want me to be a political leader exactly. I guess I better go back to the hollers of Kentucky that he came from. That wasn't his MO, because there was so much resilience built into that kid from the time he grew up in that one room dirt and stone shack, where he had determined himself, I'm going to be learned. I'm going to learn how to read. I'm going to learn how to do math. Nobody was encouraging him, by the way. I'm going to walk to school. Nobody was encouraging him. And this is where we get the idea of self-made, because he was internally determined and he had resilience against all kinds of troubles. The woman that he thought he was going to marry in his 20s died of typhoid, I believe. So much trouble in his life, and he just kept going. We want children like that. We want children who, when the going gets tough in their marriage, in their careers, in their friendships, with the Lord, having trouble with the Lord, having doubts, etc., that they don't just throw in the towel and roll over. We want children who have some determination, they have some oomph. So let me just make this statement that teaching your children, training your children to suffer well is absolutely critical to their future in God. If they cannot suffer well, if when any trouble comes up, they go into despair, they accuse God of whatever, or they go into self-hatred when there's trouble, they're going to have trouble. They will have great trouble maturing into Christ-likeness. Part of our job, this is what we're trying to say very strongly, part of our job is to introduce trouble, to watch a child struggle, watch pain happen in their life, and be there to coach them, give them support as it goes.
And what I think so important is everything you described was not sitting down in front of a book. Everything you described was experienced. And we are in such a learning culture. We think we could teach our kids that verbally or through a podcast or through a Bible study, which again are all great things, but it has to be experienced multiple times. It's not a one event thing. And I don't want any parents ever to feel pressured that their kid should respond to suffering the first time. In fact, they probably won't. And so when I started taking Henry to work, it would not unusual that he would get hurt or drop a board and on his foot and then cry and have a temper tantrum in the corner. And I would be like, okay, you're going to get back up when you're done and whatever it takes, and you're going to get back to work. Like, And so I don't want to paint this picture because we have this myth that our kids are born with character qualities, you know. It's not true. They yes. have to be developed and tested and tried and trained and walked through. And Henry has lots and lots of failures throughout the years. And likewise, obviously me as well too, the testing. It's a long game you're playing, and it's not taught by words. It has to be experienced over and over again on a journey, as you were saying, appropriately.
Yeah. Okay. Talk us through your 8-year-old son hammers his thumb.
Yes.
What do you do? How do you handle that?
So you have to take a deep breath because you want to panic. And in my scenario, we were on real job sites that needed, like, our family needed it. So I like to think about often pioneering or parenting on a pioneering trail where you actually need your kids to get in line, right? No one lets their kids ride without a seatbelt. You figure out how to get your kid in a seatbelt, right? So like with that mindset, it's okay. One, I'm going to take a deep breath. And I'm not going to go ballistic and shame this kid. And two, I'm not going to let him quit. So whatever it means, like often it would mean, okay, Henry, take a break. You got 30 seconds. You're going to get back in this. And he'll say something like, Dad, I'm done. I don't like this. This is not fun. Okay. And then what happens to most dads is they feel rejection. Oh, he doesn't love me. He doesn't want to be around me. I don't want to push him into this because then he's going to need all this counseling. And then they quit. He's just not wired for this. And I'm like, at this point, I don't care if he's wired for it or not, whatever your scenario, this is all about character.
That's exactly right.
When they get older, you can find out what they're made to be. It's all about character right now. So I'd say, Henry, we've got a couple options. I need you to get back on the job site. And so we can do it a couple of different ways. You can lose this privilege, or I can give you a discipline right here, or whatever it is. But I need you to get back in, and you're going, and I would be very firm, you're going to get back to work one way or another. And I want you to have a choice in how you're going to get back into this work with us. And I like Jesus and God does this all the time. He will paint two paths. He will say, if you go this way, here's how it's going to go. And again, here's a great, you can rest on this parenting tee. I didn't invent it. God did. If you go this way, here's the path of blessing. If you go this way, here's the path of pain. And so I'll paint that for my kids. I still do it today.
Yeah.
You guys do this and this, here's the path of blessing. If you don't, here's what you'll lose, this and this. You make the choice. And that often giving them that external motivation is extremely helpful. And we sometimes feel like they should be internally motivated, but they actually need that external motivation of those pictures painted for them. So I would use consequences on the job site. I would use painting those pictures on the job site of which way you want this thing to go. And it wasn't a one-time thing. It was maybe I had to do that 100 times. And it would evolve over time, where we would go through seasons where things would be good. And then there would be, I remember once when Henry was like 12 or 13 or something, you know, our kids go up and down and we feel like we master it. And then we're like, we got this one, this kid figured out, and then they regress, you know? And I feel like that's part of the journey. Sure. And there was a summer, and then we had a crew of people working, and Henry was just having a bad attitude. He's always been a hard worker, but sometimes his attitude would ebb and flow. And I knew I had to walk this line really carefully. If I curtail to him and enable this bad attitude, it would really wreck his character. Or if I exasperated him and pushed him too hard, it would also be bad. But I had to sit down and say, Henry, your attitude is affecting the crew. And right now, everyone on the crew has gotten a raise except you. So you're going to ride this summer without a raise, and you're going to be the lowest paid guy on the crew this summer. And that took a lot of risk. I was very scared doing that because what if he quit? What if he didn't? There was so many different things, but I knew for his character, I had to make that stand one way or another in a very loving but firm way. And I say, I'm giving a kind of a lot of the bad stories about Henry. There's plenty of good ones.
And of course.
As we get into this, you'll see the man he's become, and he still has things to work on. But we had to walk through many of these valleys where I was like, his character is more important right now than anything yes. else we're going to do.
Yes. It's important to talk about the hard stories, the bad stories, because when he does well and responds great and has a great attitude, nothing is required of you.
That's fun.
When he is trouble, when he is cantankerous, when he is stubborn, that's when the spotlight goes to Justin, the dad. And we go, what is Justin made of? And I think you make a great point that most dads, when they try to enlist their children, it seems to be more so their sons in trying to get them into whatever the thing is. And there's trouble that comes along. There will be. If you're trying to teach your kid basketball or the violin or woodworking, there's going to be trouble. There's going to be obstacles to overcome. And as soon as the kid throws it on the ground and goes, I don't want to do this anymore, as you say, the father goes to personal rejection. And usually that can be filed under, this kid doesn't want to do this. This kid isn't made to do this thing. This isn't how they're wired. And that we use that phrase, and then we get to shrug our shoulders and walk away instead of going, this isn't about, as you so wonderfully said, this isn't about woodworking. This isn't about whether you like my hobbies or not. This is trying to develop a character in my child. If you're not going to develop that in your children, whose job is it to do that? It's your job. There's no plan B other than developing character under the watchful hand of dad and mom. That's the plan. So I think this is so important, Justin, simply for us to have in mind that I want my child to be someone who is resilient. I don't want them to be a whiner. I don't want them to be selfish all the time. So we have to have in our minds where we're going. What is the outcome I want for this child? I want this kind of character. Even when you're going through trouble right now with your kids, do you think through, is it more of a reflex now? Do you have to coach yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's easier because I've been through it. That's repetition a lot, but yeah. I would not say it's natural without thing. I like to always picture Friday night when we have our kind of meal together as a family. I'm like, how do I want him to be or her to be there on Friday night? Do I want them to be holding their head in shame because they quit and didn't get through it? Or do I want to say, good job, well done, you walked through that trial this week? And so I also need a picture of the future that helps me motivate that. Because if you let your kid quit and cry and throw a temper tantrum, get their way, the result is shame. And you're letting them, this is what I picture in my head, I am now letting my child sit in shame. I don't want to do that. I don't think any parent does, but they don't. I can't wait for you to walk through this, because on the other end, I won't even need to say good job, although I probably will. On the other end, they will know, like when your affirmation is just a cherry on top, they'll know they did a good job. They know they walked through that, that real internal sense of, oh, I walked through that. It wasn't, they have to be tested and they're going to fail more often than not, but they also have to walk through and pass those tests, because that's where that competence resiliency comes from. When they know they did it, it has nothing to do with my words. They know they accomplished it.
You mentioned Friday night family meals. So do you consciously make that a time where you call out the wins of the week in your children?
Yes. Yeah. That meal is entirely focused on remembering, which is a whole nother topic. But remembering is such a powerful word for our faith. And so we remember a lot of things. And one of the things we remember is, where did God show up and where did we see someone do something good? And that's where we get to put the little cherry on top at that point, you know.
And are you the one that institutes the brag on a sibling as a part of
yes.
that meal?
Yeah. Yeah, because ever since Cain and Abel, I've never met a family that doesn't have problems with siblings getting along. It is a universal thing. And so we just built in a system where you call out where you saw a sibling do something good, just to create that culture in our home.
I love it. We have instituted that. And we also, when we have guest families in on Friday nights, we have children do that with siblings. And then we also have the adults do it with spouses. So that's always a nice move. Let me talk about one more face of resilience that I've seen in your family. Now, you guys have moved into homes only where everything was finished and it's nice and warm and carpets everywhere. Is that the kind of history you've had moving into houses?
I assume you're referring to our last one where we actually two different times in our life, we've moved into 800 square feet or less with one bathroom. One time it was with my brother's family. So we had about 500 square feet in one bathroom, two bedrooms, and there was two families living in this season like that for about 4 months.
Oh.
And then we lived another time with 800 square feet and one bathroom and eight people. And people were sleeping on the floors in the middle of rooms. And I, in all honesty, I wasn't looking forward to it for the same reasons nobody would be looking forward to it. And it was what we needed to do as a family. And I set my family down and I was really honest. So this is how I handle these things. Like, guys, there's nothing about me that wants to share a bathroom with you messy kids. I am not going to enjoy this any more than you are, but I know this is good for my character because I have a bent towards being selfish. And if I get everything I want all the time, I will become a monster. And likewise, we're all going to embrace this season. I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm not going to apologize for inconveniencing you. You guys we are all going to walk in a season of being inconvenienced because we all need it. Not just you kids, me, mom, and everyone need to be inconvenienced because I will become selfish. And it was a gift and it was not fun, but it was good for all of us. And we learned how to do it. And it forced me to train my kids to clean the bathroom because I was not going to share. They were a disaster. And I didn't really have to deal with it when they had their own bathroom, but when they became my bathroom, there was problems.
Like, yeah, right.
We had trainings on how you use a toothpaste tube. And it was like, but we had to deal with it. Yes.
That is so good. Future spouses will be very happy for the time you've spent.
Yeah, I will tell my kids that. And I jokingly, seriously say, I don't want to have to apologize to your spouse one day for creating a selfish monster. I want you to practice sharing. That's why our kids share rooms. Because I'm like, if I'm training you in the way to go, you are not going to have your own room when you're married. And like, I have kids. I'm inconvenienced all the time. Why would I want my kid to have their own room, their own schedule? Everything is based around their lives. That's rarely inconvenienced. That's not the way their life is going to go or I want it to go.
That is a great point. We, in the house that I'm sitting in right now, we have a couple of spare bedrooms, including the one I'm sitting in right now. And we have enough room for our children to have their own rooms. And we never wanted that. We want them to have to accommodate each other. I always said this to young men since I've been discipling for 30 years. I just encourage guys, when you're single, even if you're pulling down a great salary, avoid the temptation to live alone. Use the sandpaper of relationship to sand off all of your selfishness. Whether if you're a messy person, you like the kitchen messy and you don't care if there's dishes in the sink. And if you're a super fastidious person, you like things to be neat and put up all the time. Guess what? I guarantee you're going to be living with somebody that sees things differently than you. And even in common areas, maybe it's not the case in a bathroom or your bedroom, but even in common areas for you to feel, I have to accommodate and I have to be considerate of other people. When you wake up in the morning, there's still some people that are asleep. I'll be quiet. You come in late at night. I've got to be considerate of other people. So important for kids to learn. Now, I want you to start talking. We're going to get to the big trip. I want you to talk about when you started riding bikes with your kids.
Yeah. So when I've was making this transition of how to lead my family, and I was still, and my goal was to make it as an entertaining for them philosophy. Playgrounds were an easy win, but I would go to a playground and I would be utterly bored and I didn't like it. I was bored and then I would feel bad. Am I just a bad parent? I don't like running up on the playground and sliding down the slide. I don't. And there's not obviously nothing wrong with playgrounds. They're great, but it wasn't the way I was wired to be alive with my kids. But what I did love doing was riding bikes. And so we started doing bike rides as a family, and we would sometimes bike to a donut shop or an ice cream shop, but we made it an adventure where there was lots of character things that would go on, falling off bikes and this breaking, all of that would come up in this adventures. But what I found was I was so much more alive as a dad. I was I didn't have to not worry about looking at my phone because I was bored. I wanted to be engaged. I was having fun coaching, teaching, leading these kids. And again, not every kid had to become a biker. It was not the point, but it was the vehicle that we learned character with our family and how we spent time together. So I would do some really crazy things. So I would say, Shelly, give me the grocery list. Me and all six kids are going to bike to the grocery store and we're going to do the grocery shopping with trailers and bike back. And that was, for me, a lot of fun. And it was a wild adventure and there were stories. And we got to the point when Henry was about 8 to 10 years old, he started pulling a trailer with either groceries or kids in the back. Yes. And that became like, he enjoyed the challenge and he had to grow up and he couldn't mess around because he had someone else's life involved. And so again, it became very real challenges and he responded very well and he liked that. And so part of it is sometimes we don't promote our kids enough or we make it too easy for them. But once they pass these tests and they actually get the bonuses and the privileges of these things, and between the work and the testing and the things that Henry's been through, he has developed tremendous character. And I trust him. He's not a perfect kid, but I trust him. And we don't have time to tell you all the ups and downs. I've seen incredible stuff. I've seen bad stuff, but he's become a person of character. And I think where this became a reality was last summer, him and his two buddies who also worked on the crew with me doing construction, which is a fantastic way for young boys to learn how to become men because it's very real. They came to us. They came to the two dads, me being one of them, and said, hey, we would like to take the minivan, drive across country to Colorado, just the three of us, renovate this bathroom that we have been hired to do, and then we want to go backpacking in the Colorado mountains for 2 weeks. So we're going to go for a week. We're going to work for a week. We're going to get paid for that, which will pay for our whole trip. It's not going to cost you a dime, Dad. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go backpacking in the mountains of Colorado's. And I think they ended up doing 14,000 peaks in 5 days, something just crazy. And we're going to plan the whole thing. And all I need you to do is say yes. And that's a giant ask, but yeah. I actually didn't have much trouble saying yes. I said, you've actually earned this privilege. And that's what now you have unbelievable freedom and opportunity to do things because you can now pay your own way on these trips. You're not sucking resources from me and you can have lifetime bonding, incredible memories, the freedom to do it because you've passed 1,000 tests and even the ones you failed, we walk through together. And so that was like, oh, okay. Thank you, God. What a gift that they had this opportunity to do. And what a gift that I could just say, yes, you've earned it. So was it 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 16-year-old did that for 3 weeks on their own. You know.
And they made it with no broken legs?
No broken legs. There was this, that, and the other things that happened without any good adventure. But yeah, they came back all in one piece.
And that became a gateway into this summer's adventure, I think, trusting him on that one. What is your plan this summer?
Yeah. So Henry's 18, I just turned 50. For 10 years, we've built this business and I've always had this crazy idea of riding my road bike across the country. And I, you know, 2 years ago, I pitched this idea to my wife and I couldn't believe she said yes. I pitched it to Henry and then my daughter, Layla, who's 16 years old. They both said, this sounds like a blast. So this summer, starting June 1st, the three of us are going to ride our bikes from Astoria, Oregon, all the way to Virginia, about 4,200 miles. We're going to have our tents on our bikes and we're just going to do it. And the biking theme has stayed with our family and it's continuing to be incredible adventures for us. And this is a kind of a capstone, one of those real gifts of I push my kids really hard. But I say this is an opportunity for us to enjoy some of the fruit of that labor.
Holy cow. This trip, I was just looking at you. You have sent out to our Midrash group your like map. How did you come up with this map? Because I noticed where you're starting in Oregon, you follow the coast down before you actually start heading east. And I'm wondering, he's not trying to make this as short as humanly possible. How did you come up with this route?
This route is like the Trans-American route. It's the most famous route. They did it in 1976 or something for one of the bicentennials or anniversary. They created this route. So it's a well mapped out route that kind of follows very scenic, good kind of back roads. So we chose a well marked out route.
Okay. And is it supposed to be particularly beautiful or it shows you the most of America? Why was the route chosen?
I think it had something to do with some of the beauty. That's why you come down the coast. You come down the coast of Oregon because it's very beautiful. Kansas, no offense to anyone there, is not going to be the beautiful part, but they made it a good back roads and beauty, I think, with the combination of the two things, like a good bike route and some of the beauty.
Do you go through any major cities?
We don't go through any major cities, no.
Good. You know what? I was about to say something like, because I noticed, okay, you put out an email, and I'll throw this out to our whole audience, that on this route, you put out an ask. We are going to be intense, and I'm sure we'll make it. But if anybody is really excited to host three tired, hungry people in their beds with their hot water, we would accept it. So I'll just throw that out. If you're anywhere on that route and you'd be willing to host Justin this summer, anywhere along that route, please let us know. And we'd love to connect him that he could be looking forward to some friendly faces along the way. How much is it going to cost?
I don't know. At this point, we've invested some money in gear, but it will just be our groceries and camping deal. So it will be not extraordinarily expensive, but I'm sure it'll be a couple thousand dollars. It'll be about 2.5 months on the road.
2.5 months. How are you getting the bikes out to the West Coast?
You fly out there with your bikes. Actually, you put them in a bike box and you fly out there.
Wow. Okay.
Shelly and the rest of the kids are going to meet us halfway and spend a week with us. And then another time when we go through Kentucky, and they'll pick us up in Virginia. So we've got, and then my grandparents are going to show up with the kids. So we've got some other ways to keep in touch with the family. Yeah.
That is crazy. Do you think your muscles are ready for this? Do you have to do training to prepare?
Oh, yeah. We are absolutely training. We're all doing, which has been really fun. And even Shelly's doing it with us. We're doing spinning classes at the YMCA through the winter. And then we rode all last summer together like we did. We've been going out to a park, and it's got an 8-mile loop in it. And so Henry and I will do 3 to 4 loops, and Layla will do 3. Shelly will do 2. And then my boys, who are 7 and 8, will do 1 or 2 loops themselves. So they can already bike 16 miles and they're 7 and 8 years old. So it's just our family culture. We're going to get out there and go do it deal. Yes.
How many miles do you think you can get in a day?
We'll probably average between 80 and 100 a day. And there'll be a lot of variables that will play into that. But yeah.
So go 80 miles a day and then do that for 100 days.
Something like that. Yep. There'll be days off and stuff like that in there as well. Yeah.
That's amazing. What are the contrasts that you see between your kids and run-of-the-mill American kids?
I think that need to entertain, if we go back to that word. I remember when I was young, younger parent, and I just had this vision of my kids being entertained on a walk through the woods, like God's video or God's movie was Walk Through the Woods. And I had to just hold on to that because there was way more entertaining ways for my kids to spend their days. And if you set that bar low, then any kind of, you're equipping them for normal life, which isn't bells and whistles all the time. So you're equipping them. If you equip them that every Bible study has to be an incredible 10-minute video that you do, then when you get to their 16, then you need like a 20-minute good video. And then when they're adults, they need an hour video. Or what we did with our kids and continue to do with our kids is we open the Bible and read it as it was written. I don't have to make it entertaining. And I think we were like, I want this storybook Bible, it's fine. Or I want these videos highlighted. They're going to learn. I'm like, no, you're creating a culture where the Bible has to be entertaining. You're not setting them up for success. Our kids, since the day they were born, maybe not Henry, but all of our other kids have been just hearing the Bible read as it was written with no bells or whistles on it. And you're giving them a gift. It's so hard because in the moment, if I showed my kids a video, would they like it more? Of course they would. But I'm not projecting them for the future. The future is they'll just like to sit in the word as it was written without the bells and whistles. That's the vision of seeing what the future is like when you're working with these kids.
Yeah, you know, you and I are part of a men's midrash where we just read the Bible and talk about it. And Henry has been sitting in that midrash now for years. And he and one of the other kids, they sit in there, they absorb everything, they gather. Sometimes they're called on to give the young man perspective, but mostly they sit there silently and listen to the whole discussion. I grab him sometimes afterwards and ask for a reaction from him, but it is just so impressive to have him patiently listen, sit and listen to debate and conversation about the meaning of God's word. And as you say, no bells or whistles involved. And I think this is a man who will open up his Bible in the mornings and spend time with God and not expect there to be a laser show that's part of his relationship with God. This is the resilience that we're talking about. I have to keep bringing it back to this because we're in such a crisis in our country that I don't want Henry or my children's marriage to be based on, is it entertaining? Is it fun for me? Do I experience comfort and affirmation in this marriage? If that's the case, they're putting the weight of expectation on their spouse to amaze me, to humor me, to indulge me, to entertain me, that the chances of a marriage lasting, it's just decreasing. This is why we've got kids who they won't get married. And if they do get married, they see divorce as an absolute ejector seat. Anytime that trouble comes, it's not comfortable. I don't love you anymore. You don't love me anymore. What they're saying is the thrill is gone. Where's the entertainment value? And when I see Henry sitting there and listening to a conversation about God's word, I think to myself, this is a man who, when he gets married, he's not going anywhere because he's developing this battery in him where he can make it. He has resilience. Anyways, so I throw that out, that the kind of people that we're talking about developing are so strikingly different from what the world is producing right now. These whining, selfish, I want the entire world to accommodate me, as opposed to I am, to use Jeremiah's language, I am pottery, I am wet clay in the hands of the master, and he is allowed to accommodate me, like to make me bend around what he wants to make out of me. It's a completely different mindset.
Yeah. And they're seeing that in the culture. There's a fascinating new book, and it's called Bad Therapy. I think her first name is Abigail.
Yes.
She's taken a holistic view of what's happened, and it's really fascinating because her argument is, all of this culture of therapy and self-focus and over-encouragement has made unresilient children. Yes. And it has undermined the authority of our parents. Every yes. parent feels insecure that they don't know what they're doing. And so you have to hire, and again, there's nothing wrong with having a therapist, but the over-dependency on the therapy and everyone has undermined our parental authority. So parents are walking around insecure. Yes. And that insecurity is making fragile, unresilient children. And that is what's rolling out there right now. And she just talks about how you as a parent, in your imperfect way, are going to love your kid more than anyone else. She's like, just so you know, your kids know that you pay the therapist and you pay the soccer coach money to like you. They know that. It's not said, but they know that.
Yep.
And she goes, but you know what? Why grandma and grandpa come around? Because they love you. And your kids need you and your grandparents around with that sense of authority, using other resources as needed. But that pendulum has gone way too far. In that book, I haven't read the book. I just heard her interviewed. But what she described, I thought, was every parent needs to hear it, because you need to be encouraged that you have this job. You are the primary one. Nobody can replace that. And you do not need a PhD in counseling to be a good parent. There's no way God would set this up. To be that smart. That God would not do that. I just feel like you need to be super, super brilliant, talented to be a great parent. That's not true.
You're exactly right.
Yes.
Where did you hear her interviewed, Justin?
She was interviewed on the Free Press by Barry Weiss. It's a fantastic interview, worth listening to.
Mark has been mooning about that book. He listened to her conversation with Joe Rogan, and he said, it's so good. You're so good. And Mark has been telling me about this book, in which she says that there'd be nothing more detrimental to a 12-year-old girl than to sit and talk about herself and the way that she feels for 90 minutes with a professional who, as you say, is paid to be very interested. Oh, and then what did he say? And you feel what now? Oh, I'm so sorry that they would ever say that about you. And what you're building fragility into children with this therapy kind of world. And I think the warning for parents is we can be like lowercase, unprofessional, unpaid therapists to our kids many times, where we're not, what we're interested isn't who they're becoming. And are they making it through suffering in a healthy way where there's resilience being built into them? But we're thinking, how do I make sure that they feel heard? How do I minimize the troubles of life and them, et cetera? I think that this starts everywhere. I love what you're saying about it's not God's will that you try to be some low-level professional in every way in your children's lives. I have heard people say, who am I to teach my children at home math? I'm not a trained teacher. I didn't get an education degree. How do I know how to teach math to my children? There are professionals out there, and that's their whole world. They know how to teach children. Okay, I understand the logic behind that, but if you take that to its conclusion, you're not qualified to do anything except teach the kids how to do marketing, which is what you do 9 to 5. So that's insane. I just want to say God gave you your children and he gave you full authority to lead them, to speak with them, to teach them in everything from cooking to music to whatever the thing is that you have to give to them. But most importantly, character, to build a character in them that seeks after God, that somebody who honors his word. Teach your children the fear of God. That's the command that we're given as fathers. And I could go off on this, but on this kind of resilient deal, we don't teach our children the fear of God by only saying to them, God always loves you. He is your best friend at all times. He will always be there for you. You got this. All of that kind of pop affirmation garbage, which decorates the hallways of our mega churches, usually because what they're most interested in is pleasing people, making people happy. Instead of, here's the command one more time, teach your children the fear of God, the fear and admonition of his word. You do not learn fear with affirmation all the time. So we've got to be a lot bolder in the way that we speak to our children, train them. And as Justin has said, when your kid pops his thumb, you don't run, drop everything and coddle them. You speak strength to them. You can get through this. I can see it. There's no blood. You'll make it.
Yeah, I would just agree with you. You could read 1800 parenting books and blogs and all these things. And the result is you're going to feel incredibly insecure. There's no possible way you can do all the things that are in there. And so we've created this scenario where we're deeply insecure as parents. And that is actually, it actually hurts our kids. We want to be humble. And I'm like, oh, we're going too far. You've gone past humility and into unbelievable insecurity. And that is not good for our children. And so you can stumble through like your discipline issues with their character, but you can do that, right? You can walk through that and you have to be okay with your limitations. And mine are many. That God gave me my kids and my limitations, and I'm in charge of them. And I can do a good job. You and I have talked about this before, but if I go into any mom's group or any dad's group and I say, how are you doing as a parent? And these are parents that are kicking butt and taking names and are fully engaged, right? I'm not going into an AA group where they've abandoned their families. I'll say, how are you doing? You could do this experiment. How are you guys doing as parents? Everyone will look at their shoes and say, I'm failing miserably. And I'm like, what? I just have been like, that's not true. You're not perfect. Right. You've made mistakes. I believe that. But you're not failing miserably. If you who have all these resources and are 100% or in are failing miserable, where's the bar and who's setting it? And what is the inner city dad that's trying to hang on by the thread of his teeth or the mom? What are you going to point your finger at them and say they're crazy failing? No, like it goes back to this design question. God is not making it. It's not an easy job, but it is not an impossible job. And if we're sitting around thinking we're failing because we're benchmarking ourselves against a professional, this, that, and the other in any category you're doing, we're believing a lie. We are not listening to what God is telling us. He may be giving you individual direction on things to improve, but my guess, assuming you're not doing terrible, terrible things, he's not going to tell you you're failing.
That's right. You know?
And so I think that's really important to really believe the things we talked about. Work is good. Character development is good. And you are the primary person who is going to be developing that in your kids.
That is so good, Justin. Let's end with that. That's such a helpful, encouraging note to end on. Justin, I do appreciate your time and your wonderful thoughts. I just want to say, if you are in the business of, I want to lead my home and my dough like a biblical boss, these things matter to you. You want to raise resilient children the way the Wolfenbergs are doing, and you're called to the job. You can do it. You're not a failure. God believes in you. I know that he believes in you, or he wouldn't have given you the children that he has. Just do the faithful, small things of parenting. You're going to make it. Just keep going. And in God's will, may you develop children of resilience so that they may follow the Lord all the days of their life.
Hey, if you liked this content, be sure to like it and subscribe and share it with somebody. And remember, no matter how you're doing and leading your family, God's love for you is huge. And his grace is
planted.